KXONewsSports.com. And this is Connections, a chance to meet your North Shore neighbors. News, politics, left, center, right, newsmakers, people, issues, features. Connections on MSO News Sports.
Well, a very pleasant good morning to you. I'm Rick Moore. Bill Newell is there and getting the connection back. This is Connections on MSO News Sports. We try to do this most Thursdays at 11 o'clock from 11 to noon, and it's a current events program with plenty of interviews and all kinds of good stuff. Hi, Bill.
Hey, Rick. Well, we haven't missed a Thursday yet, have we?
I don't think so. We haven't. How about that?
Since we started this show, every single Thursday you can depend on the show being here at 11 o'clock.
We have been totally consistent and totally online. You betcha. And we won't tell you how many in a row this has been. But, Bill, I know that you're outside right now, and it's nice to be outside with the siege of bad weather we've had. And looks like we're getting ready for the summer season. I was up in Salisbury this morning, and there's lots of traffic there already. How about where you are?
Yeah, you drive around the North Shore, and I'm right at the coastline here. You might be able to hear the ocean pounding by here, but you've got road projects are underway in earnest. The home construction, I saw the people just saw a one of those modular homes being placed on the foundation. You know, a lot of excitement, Rick, going on here on the North Shore. And of course, we've got a number of guests coming up on the show. I know at the very tail end of the program, I'll be checking in with Gerard Moynihan, the president, or I guess he's still the president of Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire. But he is certainly the founding force behind the North Shore Student Athlete Program. They have their annual luncheon on Tuesday, where they name the student athletes of the year. Obviously, great candidates, great kids, and that all happens Tuesday. And of course, we'll keep folks posted on that. But Gerard will be by to tell us a bit about the program a bit later on.
Right, and he's got some great sports stories too along the way. I hope we can talk with him more often. And I was just up in Salisbury. I might have said Newburyport, but I was up in Salisbury meeting with Chief Fowler this morning, Bill. And they have a brand new building. It's amazing. But Salisbury goes from 8,000 people to about 20,000 people in a matter of a couple of weeks. So we'll talk with Chief Fowler in our Meet the Chief segment. Also be checking in with Julie LaFontaine. Julie is the executive director of the Open Door Food Pantry in Gloucester, and they do so much more than distribute food, which is an amazing thing. I'm going to check in with Bobby Gibb, too. You might have seen a little bit of the video we have up on the website. Bobby Gibb is the first female participant in the Boston Marathon. She actually won the female division three times as a runner. She's an amazing lady, a renaissance woman, if you will. And then we'll have our usual segment with Heather Atwood, who always gives us the story behind the story behind the story. So that's all going here, and we're glad you're with us instead of watching whatever it is that's on television today. There's something going on. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, even the soap operas could get preempted today, if this thing continues. It's crazy.
That's some serious stuff.
What is Heather talking about today? Because I'm just getting a little bit hungry here.
She talks about, she's got numbers, I think it's 31 and 30 on the world's best dishes, and I'm going to leave that for her to describe because I can't even pronounce one of them. And she gets into the Happy Belly. There's a new restaurant in Gloucester, Bill, that you got to check into. It's called the Happy Belly. So the next time you're up that way, you'll have to go in there. And then she's got a couple of other stories as well, as she always does. She's also promoting the Other Cape. There's a great story coming up on the Other Cape. That's a website. It's a magazine about Cape Ann that interviews, like we do, news and newsmakers primarily. So She's got her usual good storytelling to go over. Now, how about you, Bill? Will you be heading out today to cover more events?
Yeah, we have. There's a bunch of things happening right in the city of Lynn. The Danvers baseball team is taking on Burlington at 4:15. The Danvers softball team is playing tonight. The St. Mary's softball team is in action in Lynn today. And also Amesbury traveling down for a game. I guess it's Division 4, if I'm not mistaken. I could have that division wrong. But we have all the brackets up on our website. So if you want to go there, interactive brackets, updates, and so on. Scores. We have scores from yesterday and post-game videos and stuff with five different coaches and two senior players. So we got a bunch of things up there. on the website. So a great chance to see and hear some of your neighbors here on the North Shore.
All right, Bill, sounds good. We'll check in with you later on. Have a great day.
And it's clouding up, Rick.
Uh-oh.
Just watch out for that. Enjoy the morning here. Okay.
All right. Talk to you later, Bill.
Take care.
All right. Take care. That is Bill Newell, of course, the voice of the North Shore. And lots of information up there. Plenty of action to cover today. But also take a look at all the stuff he's got up there from yesterday. A lot of brand new stuff, a lot of interviews, a lot of videos and pictures as well. So still to come, plenty of activity here on Connections. It's your new North Shore Newsmakers magazine that we have every Thursday here from 11 to noon. I'm Rick Moore, Bill Newell, of course, the voice of the North Shore. Bill Proposky is our producer and engineer. We'll be back with our first interview with the Salisbury Police Chief coming up.
Score early and often this fall with a low-rate residential loan from the Institution for Savings. The Institution for Savings has fantastic rates, low or no fees, great service, and prompt turnaround. Plus, we service our mortgages in-house, so help is always a local phone call away. For more information or to apply online 24/7, visit institutionforsavingsloans.com or call us at 978-462-2344. Institution for Savings, member FDIC and DIF, equal housing lender.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. If you're thinking of replacing the windows in your home, you should look at the Anderson Woodwright double-hung insert window, which comes with rich wood interiors in oak, pine, or maple. Quite simply, Anderson is the most trusted window in America. That's why we've been selling them for 57 years. Please see the Anderson Woodwright windows on display at any of our three locations in North Reading, Beverly, and Plastow, New Hampshire, or at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
This is Connections on MSONewsSports.com.
I am so pleased to be at the Salisbury Police Station with the Chief, Tom Fowler. And Chief, first of all, thank you for letting me come in. Welcome to MSO, and nice to see you again.
Yeah. My pleasure. Welcome to our new police station. We just moved in here in March, so we're excited to have you and any members of the press here.
Well, it's funny. It's... I get the feeling walking in, it's like a guest home or a hotel, but that's not what a police station is, but it's a very friendly place, and it's very nice. Chief, tell me a little bit about, I met you at Masco a couple of months ago with the Institution for Savings thing about credit cards for kids and so on, and credit for life. A lot of police presence there, but tell me a little bit about your background. How did you end up where you are?
Well, I came up here about five years ago, it'll be 5 years in July. I spent most of my career in Brantford, Connecticut, where I was hired as a patrolman, went up through the ranks, sergeant, lieutenant, ended up retiring as a deputy chief, and then had the opportunity to apply and eventually get the chief's job here about 5 years ago. So that brought me up to the seacoast here, and I've had a great 5 years. I think we've accomplished a lot, but there's still some more to do. Mm-hmm. So obviously the new building. We're an accredited police department. We're certified. We will have full accreditation by the end of this summer. So that brings us up to best practices, and our policies are all in place and excellent policies. So, like I said, a lot of work to do, a lot of work done, but there's a lot of work more to do.
Well, when you say bring up to speed, more to do, a transition between before you came and now, what are some of the objectives and goals that you had coming in here or since you've been here?
When I entered or when I was hired here, it was on the heels of some controversy with a chief that left under cloudy circumstances, a series of acting chiefs. So there wasn't a permanent person in that position for quite a bit of time, which left a little bit of a leadership background. So mm-hmm. I really came in as a change agent to try and change the culture of the department, make it a little more professional. I was able to hire some quality people, make some promotions. There was no lieutenant at the time I came here, so now I have a very capable lieutenant who is my second in command. I was able to increase the number of sergeants, so now I have consistent supervision for the officers, and little by little adding numbers to the force. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So it was really a cultural change and regaining the public trust. There was a little breach of public trust with the previous chief and, working to bring that back. And I think we're in a good position now where the public appreciates and trusts us and helps us do our job.
The town of Salisbury is
typical, I think, of some coastal towns on the North Shore, except you guys get really big in the summertime and not so big in the fall and winter. Does that pose particular problems, say, this time of year?
Yeah, it is challenging. It's a unique town because, as you mentioned, this time of year, we really start ramping up for the summer, where our population pretty much doubles. We also have the state reservation in town, which is a great facility. You know, it's 1,500 parking spots for beachgoers, another 400 to 500 campsites. So over the course of a year, almost a million people use that site. And there's one way in and one way out on Beach Road. So we have traffic issues and challenges. But I think we do a good job policing it. We work well with Mass State Police, has a mounted unit there. Even in the wintertime, it's unique because the cost of the rentals go down in the winter. So we get a lot of transient people that come here and just live here for the winter.
Nice.
In the summertime, those prices go back up and they move on to somewhere else.
I'm sorry, the police station is right on that road, Beach Road. And in the summertime, I know that you get stacked up both ways. So if there's an emergency, what's the experience been for you guys getting out of here to get to the emergency during a traffic jam?
We tend to adapt to it. You know, Saturdays and Sundays on a sunny day in the summer, right around 2:30, 3 o'clock, everyone decides to leave the beach. So it does get a little bit of gridlock. The way we built the station is we have two egresses. So we have a road that goes out the back of the station that goes to Old Town Road that brings us up to Footy's Ice Cream, which is about halfway up.
Mm-hmm.
If we have to, if it's an emergency, we can use our lights and sirens to get up there. But our officers, or my officers, pretty much know on those days we make sure there are officers uptown
right.
that don't have to get stuck in the traffic.
Mm-hmm.
So we're looking at painting a nice big blue stripe in front of our station across the road with signs saying emergency exit, do not block, so that doesn't get blocked when it's all backed up.
Okay. Well, that makes sense. I know in Gloucester. I'm sorry.
Hang on.
Yeah, we can pause. Hold on. Yep. Okay, so, I mean, police officers, police station, you get busy. I know that you squeezed me in here, Chief, and I appreciate it, so I'm going to have to come back at some other time and expand a little bit. But Salisbury, it does get used in the summertime. What are some of the what's next in terms of a budget and so on, in terms of what your outlook is in the police station? How does that work?
I work very closely with the finance director, Karen Snow, and the town manager, and my lieutenant and I put together what we think is a responsible budget, try to equip the officers properly, still looking to expand the force. One of the next projects is we have a new state-of-the-art communication center here, so the plan was to bring fire dispatch, which is currently at the fire station, here to the police station. So we would dispatch both police and fire. To do that, we need to hire a couple more people. So that's the plan over the next 6-8 months, hire two more dispatchers so we will have two dispatchers on at all times. We need that because if there is a working fire, one dispatcher is dedicated to that fire, so we would lose the capability of that one dispatcher.
What do area residents do in an emergency? Do they dial 911?
Yeah, we're what they call a PSAP, a public safety answering point. So if residents of Salisbury dial 911, it rings here. If they use their cell phone, it goes to the REC, which is the regional dispatch in Middleton.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's a Salisbury call, they'll transfer it to us. Mm-hmm. So very high on public's, you know, customer service. Our dispatchers are key. They're the first people that the public deal with. So I want to make sure they're professional and they do a great job.
Kids in the city, what school do they go to?
We're part of the Triton regional system. So we have Salisbury Elementary School, which is here in town. Which is kindergarten through sixth, I believe, and then they go off to Triton Regional in Newberry. So
I have a million more questions to ask, but I'm going to keep it limited to just a couple. The opioid situation, I know that I talked with Chief Campanella when he started the PARI program up in Gloucester many times, and that has been huge in the state and in the area. Is that also something that is concerning to the town of Salisbury?
Yes, we have outrageous numbers of overdoses. People, so much to the fact that we started our own outreach program. We work very closely with the Pettingill House, which is a very good organization that provides a lot of social services to town. It's a food pantry, some mental health counseling, addiction counseling. So we've partnered with them, and I have officers that do outreach. So one of the things we started is my officers carry Narcan, which reverses the effects of an opiate overdose. We track all of our overdoses, uses of Narcan, and although the number of overdoses have increased, the fatality rate has decreased, and I think that's because of us carrying Narcan. The fire department also carries Narcan. Mm-hmm. So after an overdose, I have officers that actually go out to the person or family, says, here's some services we can offer you. Do you want to get into detox? We can get you a bed. Do you want, after that, you know, step down unit? And we work with Pettingill House because they have professional counselors there. As
where
much
they?
As
where were they?
They're right in, they have a presence here in Salisbury. They have a building on Elm Street. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, Lafayette Road. And they also have a building in Amesbury. Mm-hmm. So they serve about 10 communities. But we have a great relationship with them. We have an MOU so we can share information. If they come upon somebody that thinks we can help, they make referrals and vice versa. So it's a huge part of what we're doing.
Mm-hmm. Okay, finally, you're a border town, you're a coastal town, you're a small town, and you have unique problems and situations, I suppose, such as what has occurred recently. You've had a couple of incidents with boats and so on. Can you bring me up to speed on the most recent one?
Sure. There were a couple fishermen at the mouth of the Merrimack River, I guess, in really bad conditions, and their boat capsized. Three of my officers responded. In fact, two of them went out on the jetty and helped pull one gentleman out of the river, pretty much saved their life, you know, did a great job. Unfortunately, Coast Guard responded. Our harbor master, Newburyport harbor master, responded. Unfortunately, they were not able to rescue the second gentleman who's still among the missing. So,
when you say your officers went on the jetty, did they get there by boat or could they access it by land?
No, as I mentioned before, the state reservation, that goes right out to the river, and you can access the jetty from one of their parking lots.
Okay.
So, but it's still very dangerous. It's wet, slippery rocks. My guys did an excellent job. Very proud of them.
All right, Chief, anything else you want to mention?
No, I want to thank you for coming down. Anytime you want to come back, I'm happy to discuss issues going on. There's lots of things going on, you know, question four and legalization of marijuana.
Oh, yeah.
Being a border community, what it means, because it's still illegal in New Hampshire. It's kind of the inverse of fireworks. You know, fireworks are legal in New Hampshire, not legal here, so we deal with them. So it's going to be interesting to see how this played out. I'm pleased that the legislature's took a step back and kind of put a moratorium on this until we get some good regulations in place. But that's a whole other interview we could have.
You bet.
Great.
I'm going to make an appointment before I leave. Thank you, Chief. That is Salisbury Police Chief Tom Fowler.
All right, back on Connections. I appreciate the Chief taking time to talk with us this morning. And as you mentioned, as you heard, there was a tragedy up in Newburyport in Salisbury, Newburyport area during the week. And I'm going to read from the Newburyport Daily News article written today by Dave Rogers. I'm going to read the story. In Salisbury, as police officers Craig Goodrich and Patrick Simkowski pulled an exhausted fisherman to safety after his approximately 20-foot boat capsized Tuesday at the mouth of the Merrimack, they saw his fellow fishermen being rescued by a Coast Guard boat, or so they thought. Moments later, the two Salisbury officers realized the second man was unable to grab hold of a buoy thrown to him by the crew and disappeared from view. What followed was a lengthy search of the choppy waves with the hope of finding the man, but the Coast Guard called off the search at about 7:30 a.m. on Wednesday. Officer Goodrich said, "We actually thought he made it." Boatswain's Mate First Class Kevin Kramer said the search was actively suspended by the Coast Guard's Boston-based branch. The suspension came about 11 hours after the two men were reported to be clinging to an overturned boat. Local police, firefighters, and the Coast Guard rushed to rescue the men. In a press release, the Coast Guard said the search covered a 14-square-mile area over the course of 17 hours and included an MH-60 Jayhawk helicopter from Air Station Cape Cod, a 47-foot motor lifeboat from Station Merrimack River in Newburyport, the Salisbury Harbor Master, and the Salisbury Merrimack and Newbury Police Department. Make that the Newburyport Police Departments. The man who was rescued was described as being Asian or Cambodian and in his late 20s or early 30s. Officials said he and the missing man are from Lowell and launched their recreational craft from Cashman Park in Newburyport. Goodrich said he and Simkowski walked from the beach to the jetty and were scanning the water when they saw a man sitting on the jetty. The officers reached down and pulled him to the top of the jetty. Goodrich is quoted as saying he was exhausted. We're sad we couldn't help the other person also. Goodrich said the man spoke English but was so tired that he could barely talk. Simkowski said he and Goodrich were aware the tide was coming in at the time of the rescue, which added a lot of tension to the search. He estimated the walk from the beach to the jetty was about half a mile. For the next several hours, two Coast Guard boats from Newburyport and Gloucester searched the area from near the mouth. The search was supplemented by a Coast Guard helicopter and boats from the Newburyport and Salisbury Harbormasters. The aerial search was suspended during the night but resumed yesterday morning. The search was then called off until further notice. Newburyport Harbormaster Paul Hogg said the area where the two men were fishing is a popular spot on the number of catches made there, and generally speaking, that's a pretty good fishing spot, Hogg is quoted as saying. Based on winds of about 25 miles an hour and up to 12-foot waves, Hogg said it was too dangerous to be there. Anything like that, you should stay away from. And again, that's written by Dave Rogers, Newburyport Daily News. This is Connections on MSO News Sports. We'll be back with our next interview coming up in just a second, as we will be talking with, who will we be talking with? I'm looking for something. Here it is. We'll be talking with Julie LaFontaine, the executive director of Open Door up in Gloucester.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. If you're thinking of replacing the windows in your home, you should look at the Anderson Woodwright double-hung insert window, which comes with rich wood interiors in oak, pine, or maple. Quite simply, Anderson is the most trusted window in America. That's why we've been selling them for 57 years. Please see the Anderson Woodwright windows on display at any of our three locations in North Reading, Beverly, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
Back on Connections, I'm with Julie LaFontaine of The Open Door and other things as well. Julie, hello.
Hi, Rick. It's good to be here.
Absolutely. It's fantastic. And Julie, when I say Open Door, that's just one of the things. Maybe you could explain what the Open Door organization is once again and how many different things you have going on.
Okay. Well, Rick, you're absolutely right. The organization is the Open Door, but we do a lot of things. Our mission is to alleviate the impact of hunger in the community. We do that first and foremost by connecting people to good food. We do that through our two food pantries. We have one here in Gloucester and one in Ipswich. We have a community meals program. We have a family supper program. We have mobile markets, which are fruit and vegetable markets that go to public housing neighborhoods and low-income schools and senior centers. With summer coming up in just a couple weeks, we'll be starting our summer meals program where we provide free breakfast and lunch during the 10 weeks that kids aren't in school.
Okay. All right, and you also have a thrift shop of sorts?
I do. I would be terribly remiss not to mention one of our near and dear programs is Second Glance, the thrift store of the Open Door. It's located over on Pond Road. And if you haven't been there, you've got to go check it out. If you think of a thrift store, it's not a dusty basement. It's 9,500 square feet of shopping, pleasure, and treasure. Really, truly furniture and used household items and clothing and artwork and jewelry. It's a real treasure hunt.
What I'm amazed about, Second Glance, there's two aspects of it. One is the retail aspect that you mentioned. When you go in there, it's like going into a department store. It really is well maintained, and the quality items that you can get. But the other aspect is on the other side, outside, you have a number of people who are accepting goods from the community. And what I'm amazed at, Julie, is how much stuff that is accepted. I don't know how much gets rejected, but it's amazing the courtesy, the civility with which the people there are working and how they deal with people delivering this stuff. So in other words, if I've got something that is in good shape but I don't use it anymore, what is it if you don't use it after a year, right?
Right.
Whatever it is, we can take it over to Second Glance and it's always accepted. So tell me a little bit more about that. It's amazing.
Sure. Well, Rick, you're absolutely right. We call Second Glance recycling on steroids. if you think about it, everything in that store is something that someone didn't want anymore in their home, and they have brought it to Second Glance for it to find a new home. Mm-hmm. And so it's really the best of all worlds. You can recycle and share what you don't need, and someone can come along and find what they do need. And Rick, I'd also like to say that shopping at Second Glance is not just for people who are low income. It's for everyone. Yes, everyone yes. in the community is invited to shop there. And in fact, the more you shop there, the more you're supporting the hunger relief programs that I just mentioned mm-hmm. of the Open Door. And so it's a win-win for everyone. I run into people once in a while who say, well, I'd like to shop there, but I don't want to take something away from someone else. And really, truly, that is not the case with that. It's a public shopping experience, and it is a community coming together to really support the mission of the Open Door.
And I'd bet whatever goes off the shelf is quickly replaced very soon.
Well, I've got two words for you. Volume marketing. We have to move that stuff quickly. We do try to price it low enough so that it is going out the door almost as quickly as it comes in, because, indeed, there is something coming in right behind mm-hmm. it.
All right, back to the hunger program, the alleviation of hunger program. Tell me how that differs this time of year as compared with maybe wintertime, because every time I talk to you, it's usually during a fundraiser. Thanksgiving, you're up at Market Basket or wherever, and then and that carries into Christmas, and then we just did the Pride Stride. But, everybody is aware that in bleak months, people need help. But how is it in the summertime? And you just mentioned an extra program that you've added.
Yes, so every season brings a different reason or a new expense to the table. I think, as you mentioned, during the winter months, you have higher heating costs. But if you think about it, in the summer, you may have higher cooling costs, energy costs that way. And certainly, if you're a parent with children, you're all of a sudden having to provide the extra meals, breakfast and lunch, that perhaps they'd been receiving in school during the school year. And so there are a number of things that come into each season. But it's not just seasonal. I think that the thing that you have to look at really to understand what's going on is that, many people that we serve are working, sometimes one, two jobs, but the actual wages are not actually keeping pace with the cost of living. When you think about what it costs to put a roof over your head and food on the table, it's a real struggle. And that's why the Open Door is there to help kind of fill that gap and help people get over a patch where they may just need a little help.
Are people or families sometimes reticent about using the help that you offer?
Absolutely. I think everyone has an idea that, coming to get help is something that they may feel ashamed about. But the first time they come, I think they get a chance to see that it is a very welcoming experience. The food pantry itself is set up just like a grocery store. The volunteers are phenomenal. We have over 1,000 volunteers who work with the organization over the course of the year, and they really work hard to make that experience good for people who mm-hmm. are coming in. And you leave with a grocery cart full of food, and I think after you get over that first hump and see that there is nothing to be ashamed of, it's a good community resource.
I get goosebumps now. What about the numbers again? Because I'm always amazed when you go over the numbers. Tell me again on how many people or how many families are served during the course of a year or a particular time that you use as a stat?
Sure. So last year, the Open Door actually provided 1,398,837 pounds of food to 6,917 unduplicated people. And when I say unduplicated, Rick, I mean they came, some of them came once a week, some of them came once a month, some of them came every other month, but that's unduplicated 6,917 people. And so in Gloucester, that's one in six Gloucester residents, as well as the surrounding cities and towns. I mentioned that we do have two food pantries now. Last year, we opened up a satellite location in Ipswich and doubled our service area by serving the towns contiguous to Ipswich. So we have served since 1978, Gloucester, Rockport, Manchester, Essex, and Ipswich. And now we also serve Rowley, Boxford, Topsfield, Hamilton, and Wenham.
That's incredible. Are there Do you have support from, I know the answer to this, I guess. I feel like with Perry Mason, you're supposed to know the answer to the question before you ask it. But you do have people in the community, businesses or others who are, I don't want to say they're partners, but you can rely on them to help?
Absolutely. I think that, you know, we're only as good as our community, and we have a community that really thinks that it's important to take care of your own. And we could not do the job that we do without the businesses, the individuals giving up their time and their treasure to help make this all happen. I mean, 1.4 million pounds of food is a lot of food, and that does not happen with just a small handful of people. That happens with everyone saying this is important. And we're behind it.
And every time I see something that has Open Door on it, when the banner's out there and people are collecting, everybody seems to be, they feel like they're doing something good, because sometimes, you know, you say when there's a tragedy, you say, well, if there's anything I can do. Well, people do do this, and it makes you feel good. You can be active without really killing yourself.
Absolutely. I think that it is just as simple as that. We all can reach out and help each other. And from wherever you are, you can give a little, you can give a lot, but you can make a big difference.
Final question, Julie. Is there any kind of, I don't know what the right word is. You mentioned healthy eating. So that, I think, would be tied into some education, particularly when you get the young kids and you talked about working with them in the summertime. So there is that. Is there, I don't know how to ask the question, but is there a way, or have you seen any improvement in this situation as in the time you've been here? Or are more families needing to avail themselves of this help?
Well, we've certainly seen the numbers climb, and I think really if we look at the history, what happened, you know, after the economic decline, there were people who really used up their savings. They used up their margins, so to speak, and then when they were reemployed, they were climbing out of a hole. And I think that, you know, recovery takes longer sometimes than maybe what we're reading in the newspaper.
Yeah, it's been a slow one, sure. Okay, and contact. People want to donate, get a hold of you, or help someone, how best to do it?
Well, there are lots of ways to connect with us, and we like to connect with you. Check us out on Facebook. We're the Open Door MA. Our website is foodpantry.org, and if you'd like to give us a call, we can be reached at 978-283-6776.
Thanks, Julie. Julie LaFontaine, the Executive Director at Open Door. This is msonewsports.com. Many aspects of estate planning are interrelated, and you can turn to attorney Bob Andruga for full-service estate planning to help you develop a comprehensive plan in providing for your future. Bob will work with you through the years to adapt your plan as needed, and he can assist you with managing wills, trust, probate, and taxes. Visit the law offices of Robert J. Andruga at 128 Main Street, Gloucester, or call today for an appointment at 978-283-6883. We return with Connections, and once again, I'm at the Pleasant Street Tea Company in Gloucester, this time with Bobby Gibb, the world-famous first female marathoner in the Boston Marathon, and also a winner three times. I didn't realize that, so forgive me. So, Bobby, first of all, how are you?
I'm fine, thanks. Wonderful. Lovely to be here. Nice to see you.
Great. Thank you. Okay, well, not a lovely day as we record this. It's another northeast storm. But let's sort of start... with the most recent and go backwards, you recently just came back from New York, and it had to do with a book. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I was just down in New York. We were launching a book that is called The Girl Who Ran, and it's put out by a publishing company in Seattle called Compendium. It's an inspirational publishing company. It's a lovely book written by two authors, one that lives in Ireland and the other in London. It's a children's story with lovely illustrations about how I trained for the marathon in 1966, running across the country, basically, in my Volkswagen van with with my Malamute puppy. And at night, I slept out under the stars, and then every day I ran in a different place all across the country.
Tell me about the genesis of the book. How did that story, how did the book come about? How did you meet these people and so on?
Well, they heard about my story, and they thought it was very inspiring, and they said, this has to be a book. It has to be a children's book. So they reached out to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is this published now? Is it out?
It's published, yeah. It's out, and it's going out to bookstores and libraries, and it's going to be available online through Compendium. Yeah.
Okay, well, now your story goes back... It's political in a way, because as a teacher, I know that girls were channeled in one direction back in the 60s and before that. You had three choices, I think. You could be a nurse, you could be a teacher. What am I missing?
Secretary.
Or secretary, of course, absolutely. And that was it. You sort of busted through those barriers.
Well, yeah, I saw what was coming when I was an adolescent, and I said, I can't live like this. I cannot live in this little box that society has put women in. And I thought I was going to go up to Canada and live out in the woods. I said, I can't do this. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to change it, but how do you go about changing society? And how do you go about changing social consciousness? You have to change individual consciousness. And so I think, well, every individual is different. We have a nation of unique individuals. In fact, we have a world of unique individuals. And I've always disliked this idea of stereotypes and typologies. And we put ourselves and we put each other in these stereotypical boxes and these typologies. And then we try to force other people into our concept of what they should be. And we try to force ourselves into what we think society wants us to be. And I keep saying, no, you're a unique individual. You find what you came here to give, who you are, and how to express it and how to give that to the world. And, of course, that's very hard if the world is stacked against you, if you're living in a social system that won't allow you to be who you are. And that's what I was up against. That's what billions of people in the world are still up against that thing. They live in social constructs that don't allow them to fully maximize their potentials and their talents.
So what kind of support did you have, either at home or in public school or private school, Kate, at first through 12? What kind of support did you have that helped you, you know, not be a secretary or a nurse or a teacher? Not that there's anything wrong with those, don't get me wrong.
No, no.
But you went outside that, so you must have had some kind of support. Said, okay, if you're interested in, I don't know, physics, if you're interested in whatever, then you can go after it.
Well, I didn't really have any support. I mean, I was very close to my dad when I was little, and he was a brilliant scientist. And I love science, which was unusual for a girl in those days. And so he got me a microscope, and we looked on. But as soon as I reached adolescence, he tried to force me into the same social constructs for my own good. And so I was running in the woods with the dogs. Well, of course, they thought I was nuts. I mean, and both parents were trying to force me into the social constructs for my own good. And so I really had no support. I was escaping into the woods with my dogs. I think I was harking back to some of the Greek goddesses who were the last vestige of where I could find women who were independent, who were brilliant. Athena, goddess of wisdom, and Artemis, the goddess of the hunt and childbirth and so on. And I think unconsciously I was harking back to that, but I had no support, really.
Wow. Okay, then what about in college? You did the same thing. You went after what you wanted to do.
Yeah, I was scared. I mean, I knew I was stepping outside the boundaries, and I took mathematics. I took higher mathematics. I studied physics. I studied biology. I took all my pre-med courses. And that was unusual for a woman in those days. Now women do this all the time. But that's what I love. So I followed what I loved. I don't know how I had the sense to do that. The same with running is I followed what I loved, and I fell in love with the marathon in 1964, and I followed what I loved against the social convention. And then I didn't realize it was going to be a social statement until 1966, a couple months before the marathon. I wrote for my application, and they wrote back and said, women are not physiologically able, and they're not allowed. So it wasn't until then that I knew it was going to be a social statement. And then at that point I said, wow, this could be a chink in the armor. If I can prove this misconception about women wrong, it'll throw into question all the other misconceptions. So that's what I've been doing ever since. I've been writing books. I wrote Wind in the Fire, which is the story of from when I first saw the marathon in 1964 to when I ran it in 66. And then I just published another book called 26.2 Essays, And those are my thoughts. And along the marathon route, I take different scenes. Like I go by Wellesley and I talk about women. So these are my thoughts that I have. And I'm still doing the same thing. I'm still seeing how false beliefs keep us captive and how we can be manipulated by buying into false beliefs and how the truth really does set us free. So I'm trying to understand things and understand how things are connected. And I have a different perspective on things, whether it's religion or politics or women or science. And I look at things differently.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you do. Yes, you do. There's no doubt about that. Okay, so what are you looking at now? I mean, right now, as we record this, you're working on something in the computer. You're an artist and a sculptor, and you're working. What are you doing right now, in other words, contemporarily?
Well, I'm working in conjunction with a lab at the University of Massachusetts Medical Center, and I do online research of literature, in other words, journal articles. So every month I read a couple hundred journal articles, and right now I'm working on ALS and trying to figure out, I love putting puzzles together, trying to figure out what is going on, what's going wrong, how do we stop it, and I'm doing that, and I'm writing. I'm thinking a lot about religion and the part that religion plays in the world right now, positive and negative, and how religion interfaces with politics. I'm very interested in politics now, and I'm trying to think. I love to solve problems, and I see the world and this country. We're up against a lot of problems that need to be solved, and they're all interlocking. A lot of them are interlocking problems. And I'm trying to figure out what is it that we need to do? How do we need to change our own individual consciousness, our social consciousness, and the way we organize our political systems, our economic systems? I'm writing a book on economics. I wrote a book called The Art of Inflation many years ago, and I wrote another book called The Art of Economics. And I'm trying to look at the very simplest units of the economy. Like, an economy is basically how we each make a living. And so start with how do we make a living, and then a business is an organized activity in pursuit of livelihood. So I'm taking those right back down to the basics, and now I'm feeling, how do we build an economy that works for everybody? I mean, everybody talks about we need an economy that works for everybody. Well, what is it? How does it work? Why does wealth tend to concentrate in certain systems? How can we have a broad distribution of purchasing power in the market? What are we thinking that's keeping us locked in? So the economy, the politics, and religion all interface with each other. And so I'm trying to figure out how the world can be better and how our lives can be better and how... There was a huge shift in social consciousness. Then my run was sort of a pivotal point that helped to change social and individual consciousness.
Yes.
And now I'm thinking the world has to change its social and individual consciousness. We have to get beyond this idea of war. We have to develop internationally ways of solving conflict and solving problems without violence. And so how do you make the structures? How do you build the institutions that do that? Just revolting against something negative, you know, overthrowing the dictator doesn't help. It helps, but it's not enough. You've got to actually create a society and a political system and an economy that works. And so I'm really interested in how you do that.
I think you're raising alarms here with this talk.
No, the first responders. I mean, they are fantastic.
Well, I think we need to save that for another discussion,
right.
Because obviously we can get in some pretty deep stuff there, and given today's political climate. And what about your gallery? Tell me a little bit about that, your artwork.
Oh, yeah, Charles Gallery. Well, I love doing artwork. You know, I've always done it ever since I was a kid. It was like running. I never stopped. I mean, we all are artists when we're four. and I just never stopped. And so I do sculptures of athletes, and I do big colorful murals and paintings and portrait. I do portrait bronzes of people from photographs, and I love working with clay, and I love doing the paints and everything. It's like a meditation. It's just really, really nice.
I'm just wondering, do you sleep?
Yeah, I love to sleep. That's I actually get my best work done when I'm sleeping.
Okay.
I go to bed, and in the morning, my book is writing itself, so I'm just taking dictation. And also, when I sleep, I see beautiful colored patterns and designs in my mind. Some people hear music. Well, this is like colored music. And so I try to capture those in my more abstract paintings.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'm blown away here. let's do this again so we can expand on stuff.
Yeah, great, great. Lovely talking with you.
Same here. That's Bobby Gibb. This is MSO News Sports.
People come in, take a seat. You're really in for a treat at Sylvan Street. A great place to eat and drink and meet with family and friends at Sylvan Street. Treat you right.
Catch a game with friends, meet for lunch, cocktails after work, or a romantic dinner for two. Whatever your plan to do it at Sylvan Street Grill in Peabody and Salisbury. See you at Sylvan Street.
Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. If you're replacing the windows in your home, please see the Anderson 400 Series windows on display at any of our three locations in North Reading, Beverly, or Plaistow, New Hampshire. The Anderson 400 is attractive, durable, energy efficient, and reasonably priced. Remember, Anderson is the most trusted name in windows. See the Anderson 400 at any of our three locations. That's North Reading, Beverly, or Plaistow, New Hampshire, or at MoynihanLumber.com.
This is Connections on MSONewsSports.com.
Continuing with Connections, I'm Rick Moore along with Heather Atwood today with the story behind something. Heather always has a story, don't you?
I do. I have a story. I have a tiny story behind a story today. But I have a lot of other regular stories.
Yes, you do.
Yeah.
Okay, so we are once again at the Pleasant Street Tea Company. And let's start with the article that was in the paper, the Gloucester Times, this week about a video, a fish video. Do I have that right?
Five fish videos. Well, actually, four recipes and one introduction by the renowned fishing commissioner of Gloucester, Al Cotone.
Okay. All right, so a little background on all this.
So, last summer, I participated in a workshop that was run by the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency. And it was called Local Food, Local Places. It was a program that was supposed to, that was awarded to certain cities in which they were going to investigate how to rebuild, rework, redo their local food systems. So I sat around with a lot of people in the city at City Hall. We broke into workshops or tables and in a workshop, and we all had conversations about what can we do? What can we do to improve our local food systems? And a bunch of us had the idea of creating some cooking videos because, you know, that's where my head goes. So I got in touch with my really wonderful friend, Annie Copps. Annie Copps is she's an exquisite chef. She's a great chef. She's worked at Olive's, Todd English's restaurants, many others. But more recently, she's been the executive editor at Boston Magazine and food editor at Yankee Magazine. She's done a lot of stints on the Today Show. I've seen her bake apple pies in the middle of Times Square for national television. She's really talented. She's very funny. She's incredibly entertaining. So I just knew she would be great talking about Gloucester fish.
Excellent.
Yeah.
So how do we view these videos?
So all you need to do, I'll just go on. So we made these cooking videos. Al Cotone brought four local fish, pollock, whiting, redfish, and flounder, to my kitchen, and Annie produced these recipes. They're her recipes. She created the recipes, and then she cooked each of them. They were produced and directed by Jordan Gary, videographer, and he's a local guy also. And so each of the recipes is a freestanding video. And you can go to the Gloucester Fresh website. That is a city-run website, and the videos are there. You can watch the videos. You can get the recipes. And they're all, you know, as I said to the Gloucester Times this week, we really wanted something updated. We wanted recipes that were a little bit more modern, really easy for the home cook, but just kind of had a little bit more 2017 to them, you know.
I'm always interested in the technical part of it. How long did it take you to put together a 4 or 5 minute video?
It took all day, but we did, I'm trying to think, you know, we did the 4 cooking videos and the 1 introduction with Alcatoni, and it was a long day.
Mm-hmm. There were a lot. In one day.
We did them all in one day,
okay.
Yeah, but it takes a lot. Okay. But the reason it actually didn't take forever was because Annie Copps is so good. I mean, I think we did each of them in one take. There were no retakes because she just talks. She knows what she's saying. She's clear. She knows her food. She's brilliant. She's really good.
Sounds like someone else I know. We're down to number 31 and 30?
We are at 31 and 30. 31 is prosciutto. Now, you know what prosciutto is because your wife is Italian. You don't know. Oh, my gosh. He's looking at the ceiling. That is just shocking.
I do, but I just... You say it better.
I really hope your wife isn't listening to this show. Okay, so prosciutto is Parma ham. It is ham...
Oh, with olives in it and stuff?
No. It's produced in Parma, Italy. And it has one of those designations where it cannot be... You can't call it Parma ham. You can't call a Virginia ham a Parma ham. It can only be called Parma if it's created in Parma, Italy. And it is...
Are you sure about that?
Yes, I'm positive about that, actually. the other things can be called prosciutto because what it is... A Parma ham is a prosciutto, which is a cured leg of a pig. So it is not cooked. It's cured. All it is... if it's done the right way, is a lot of salt is rubbed on the outside, and it's hung for at least 12 months in a dark place in Parma. Okay, it has to be in Parma. Now, lots of places create prosciutto. There's domestic prosciutto, and but you can't call them a Parma ham. So I think for the purposes of number 1, or 31, I mean, we can say prosciutto because it's just simply really popular.
Okay.
But I do have one little... This is where my story goes. We're going to fit my tiny little story in here.
Yeah, cool.
So one of the very traditional ways of serving prosciutto, at least in Italy, is wrapped around a piece of melon. Have you ever seen that?
No.
Yep. So cantaloupe, traditionally cantaloupe, but sometimes watermelon.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so in Italy, that is a famous thing to serve. Beautiful wedges of cantaloupe with these paper-thin pieces of prosciutto laying over
them.
Now... In the Italians have very, very specific ideas about digestion. I mean, they're obsessed with digestion.
Mm-hmm.
They believe you have to eat in certain things to have it all digest well. Well, they actually believed until probably the 18th century that you would die if you ate cantaloupe by itself. You actually had to eat it with prosciutto.
See, I believe that. That's one thing I do believe.
That is what's really funny about you. Exactly. So they thought it would chill your organs.
So it's not true then. Okay. Damn.
So you're going to run out and get a piece of ham to put over that piece of watermelon you have now. Right.
Now I'll have it, yeah.
Right. So, no, they thought it would chill your organs and that you would die.
Okay.
So you had to eat prosciutto with your cantaloupe.
Well, it certainly makes sense to me. Yeah.
And you and a lot of Italians.
There you go. All
yeah,
right.
I'm sure there are many who still think that, by the way.
Okay. Well, there's a lot of vegetables. If you eat them alone, they'll kill you.
Exactly.
Right?
True.
You got to put them in French dressing, and then it works. Okay, so number, what are we down to, 30?
30 is, I'm not even going to try to say the Vietnamese name for Vietnamese spring rolls.
What is it called?
Vietnamese spring rolls.
Okay.
I will spell it. G-O-I word C-O-I-N, I think. So goi, quan, mm-hmm. something like that. But I do know them well. They are absolutely delicious. Again, we're back in Southeast Asia, where mm-hmm. the voting really seems to have happened on this,
right.
You know, 1 through 50 list. But these spring rolls are really beautiful. They are not the fried kind. They are a little bundle of fresh, usually fresh herbs like mint and basil, with maybe a little piece of chicken, maybe a piece of shrimp, a little bit of very finely chopped lettuce. So really fresh tastes inside this little bundle, which is wrapped in a rice paper wrap. So it's very, it's cool tasting, it's fresh tasting, and then you dip it in some sort of savory sauce. It usually has fish sauce in it. They are delicious. I love making them.
That sounds, now, so how many of these on the top 50, let's see, we've gone from 30 to 50, you've sampled most of this stuff?
No, I did not sample the fermented, the stinky tofu. I haven't had the stinky tofu.
God.
Yeah, I know. I don't remember which, and that was up there, well, that was the beginning of the list. I'd say maybe three quarters of these things I've had, yeah.
And the green fried crab, you actually had that?
That was not on this list, but I have had that.
Had green,
yes, in fact, there's going to be another fried soft shell green crab night at Woodman's this coming Monday.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
You heard it here first. Whew. Okay. Update on the other Cape.
So the other Cape, right now we have a story up about Innovation House in Magnolia. Do you know about Innovation House? Well, it's pretty. It's a pretty cool story. This tech guy, he invented the browser Opera. His name is Jan von Techner. He knew nothing about Gloucester. He was living in Norway. He's originally from Iceland. He was living in Norway, and he created this Opera browser. It did really, really well. It had tons of fans. People, I mean, I did not understand when I wrote this that one could be a fan of a browser, but it's kind of a culty thing. And the Opera browser did really well. So it was, it went public. It went through that whole thing. And so, you know, it was a huge success. And then Jan von Techner was very upset because the new board kind of did not treat his employees well, and he's a people who believes in his people. He's a person who believes in his people. Sorry. So he left Opera, and he roamed around a little bit trying to figure out where he would live. Now, this is a man who grew up in Iceland and then lived for maybe 20 years in Norway, but he's a tech guy, so he's looking over there at Silicon Valley, right? But there's no way an Icelander could live in Silicon Valley. So he landed in Gloucester. Yeah, so he says that Gloucester looks a lot. He said the ocean looks like Iceland and the snow looks like Norway. So he loves it here, and he has started something over in Magnolia called Innovation House. He has built a new browser called Vivaldi. Vivaldi, which is also incredibly popular with it's a pretty large user group.
Mm-hmm.
And he... In the month of June, he has all his Vivaldi team in Norway come to Magnolia and stay at Innovation House, and you'll see them, like all these very Scandinavian-looking people running around Magnolia and Gloucester. But he also invites people to come to Innovation House. Startups, you know, wanting advice can come there.
Mm-hmm.
He has a separate Innovation House in Iceland. And he invites Iceland. He uses the Innovation House here as a place for Icelanders to set up camp in the U.S.
This is on the other Cape, so we don't want to give too much away.
I'm sorry, right. Okay, end of story. That's it.
Okay.
You have to go to the other Cape to read more.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
And you have to go to the other Cape to see the fabulous picture taken by Jason Groh of Jan von Techner.
Excellent.
Yeah.
All right. And the other Cape website?
The other Cape, www.theothercape.com.
Okay. Okay, and let's see here. A couple of other things. You mentioned last week Happy
Belly.
Happy Belly.
Belly, yes. The Serenity Group has done it again. They have opened. I think the official opening, I shouldn't say have opened. The official opening is tomorrow for Happy
Thursday?
Belly. Yes, Thursday. Right. Yeah, this will air tomorrow. So I went to one of the many sort of debut dinners last week, and it's going to be a very fun place. What is the funnest part of it is it's open from 7 in the morning till 9 o'clock at night. So they do breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And if any of us were around for the Glass Sailboat and the Sunny Day Cafe, did you ever go to either one of those?
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So it was a great place to go at 9 o'clock in the morning. You'd seat some people. You'd get a cup of coffee and a blueberry muffin, just as we do here. And it was a good communal place, and I miss that. So that will be back. Along with smoothies and there are all kinds of fancy coffee drinks.
Did you want to mention an upcoming event at the end of the month?
Yes, I do. This is really something that's close to my heart because the city of Gloucester, is honored to have in residence now Barbara Lynch. Now, you were nodding blandly, but if you're a cook or an eater, like sort of a gourmet kind of eater, you would know Barbara Lynch. She has a restaurant empire in Boston. She is nationally, if not internationally, acclaimed at this point as a really, truly great chef. And her story is incredible, absolutely incredible. She was raised in the projects in South Boston, and she has, you know, elevated to this very, very lofty place. And she never graduated from high school. Forget college, not even high school. She had a tough start, and she has a new memoir out. I will interview her tomorrow, so there'll be a little bit of discussion about this memoir in The Other Cape and the Gloucester Times.
Awesome. Okay.
But she is doing a talk on June 29th at 7 o'clock at the bookstore in Gloucester.
And we will mention that again.
Yeah.
Well, that's a full interview with Heather Atwood with the story behind the story. This is MSO News Sports. And we're back live right now on Connections. I want to remind you about an event taking place in Rockport on Thursday, June 15. This is Elder Abuse Awareness Day. I'm sure it's taking place in other communities as well. But in Rockport, my friend Officer Roger Lesh of the Rockport Police Department involved in this, and he sent along a flyer that I'd like to read to you. Join sponsors Rockport Police Department, Rockport Council on Aging and Senior Care anytime between 10 a.m. through noon on Thursday, June 15, to show your support in helping to end elder abuse. Hundreds of thousands of elders are abused, neglected, or exploited annually. Unfortunately, no one is immune. Elder abuse occurs in every demographic and can happen to anyone, a family member, a neighbor, even you. Elder abuse is a rapidly growing crime and is punishable by law. Often victims and bystanders do not recognize the signs of elder abuse. Please join the Rockport Police Department and others to learn more and to raise awareness of this epidemic. Together, we can all make a difference for our community. All are welcome. Bring your business, your organization, or a handmade banner or sign. And again, this is at Five Corners Rockport, 10 a.m. to 12 noon. It's a Show You Care event. You can call 978-546-1212, extension 13, for more information about this or anything else really involving this kind of thing. Or you can email Roger at rlesch, L-E-S-C-H, R-L-E-S-C-H. S-C-H, that's Roger's last name, Lesh, at pd.rockportma.gov. And there you go. Okay, so one more interview coming up in this hour of Connections, and I invite you please to send along comments to msonewsports@gmail.com, msonewsports@gmail.com. Please tell people about this. This is a weekly show heard on Thursdays from 11 a.m. to noon. We will not have an edition of Trending Now with Josh Arnold tomorrow, as we are getting ready here in the Moore family to get ready for high school graduation this weekend up at Gloucester High School. So no Trending Now, and by the same token, there will be no North Shore Sports Night. We'll be back to a regular schedule, however, later on in the week, and we'll have those programs coming up to you in the future. So please visit the website as many times as you can during the day. Lots of updates, and Bill Newell is always updating with news and sports every single day here on MSO. Again, msonewsports@gmail.com. That's the best way to get a hold of us. Okay, so still to come, we've got Bill Newell coming up with one more interview on this edition of Connections.
This is MSO News Sports. I'm Bill Newell, and we're joined by Gerard Moynihan from Moynihan Lumber,
but also the founder, one of the founders of the North Shore Student Athlete Program, and the 25th anniversary of the program is this year. And Tuesday is the 25th luncheon, dinner, whatever it is. It's at noontime now at the Salem Country Club, honoring past winners and, of course, the current winners from this year. Gerard, congratulations, and it looks like a big day coming up.
Well, I'll tell you, Bill, it is it's marvelous to think that the thing is now achieved this milestone of 25 years, and we're thrilled at the way the program has developed. I'm delighted with the support that we get from the area high schools. The youngsters that we have honored, they are just so terrific. I have told you this before. We've talked about this before. Anybody ask me what is the strength of your program, I just simply list the names of those people who have won because they are just outstanding youngsters. And I say youngsters, some of them now are well beyond their high school years, but they're doing wonderful things in the communities and just great kids. And I'm thrilled with that.
You know, I know a lot of them have moved away. They have careers that just like other folks would do. Yet some of them are still around here. And one of the very first winners, right, is Ted Betancourt, mayor of Peabody, the first student athlete of the year on the male side.
Teddy was our first winner, and he was joined that year by Lauren Maney George. Both were outstanding basketball players. Both, incidentally, went to Holy Cross. And we're outstanding athletes there and are both members of the Holy Cross Athletic Hall of Fame. They were Patriot League champions and Patriot League All-Stars while they were at Holy Cross. They have done wonderful since then, obviously. Most people are aware of all of the things that Teddy has done and, of course, being mayor of Peabody. And then Lauren her resume is absolutely splendid, in addition to the fact that she's now a mother and raising children and just two great people. And one thing that we're delighted with is we have them both coming back next Tuesday to help us celebrate 25 years. So we're thrilled to have them come back again.
I know that sounds that should be a great addition to the luncheon on Tuesday. When you look back at all the people that have won, whether it be a monthly winner, an annual winner, I'm sure the annual winners certainly stand out. You know, who does stand out to you, Gerard? I mean, because these are kids that do so well in the classroom and then do well athletically as well. But certainly standing out in the classroom is one of the big keys here.
Well, I think the important thing for me has always been the work that these youngsters have to do and the discipline they have to show in order to be both good athletes and good students. The way this program all began, Bill, very simply, I was watching my daughter, Kerry, play. She was a three-sport athlete at Our Lady of Nazareth in Wakefield, and she was third in her class of 85, and I saw how much she worked, and I saw how much two of her friends, who played also three sports, the way they had to discipline themselves in order to work, and I just thought right then that we should have a program that honored young people and do it on a regular basis so that the idea being that these kids are doing this all during the year, regardless of the sport, we should be covering them and we should be highlighting them as much as possible because they are the true models that kids should look up to in high schools. And I just feel that the whole idea here is that these kids are really special. And in the 25 years that we've had this program now, I can tell you that, I mean, it's hard for me to believe this, but over 450 youngsters have won a monthly award. And then, of course, we have our annual winners of the Athlete of the Year, Student Athlete of the Year Award. But all of these kids are just terrific. To me, there's so many of them that resonate with me. I think we've just talked about Teddy and Lauren, but I think about someone like Becky Blazer, who was just a terrific athlete at Masconomet, and then went from Masco to Harvard. And then what stands out, Becky, was that in her sophomore year, I think it was, she had a very bad injury and was unable to play collegiate athletics again. But she had the wherewithal and the ability to continue at Harvard, to complete her education, to be able to take that discipline and training that she had on the sports fields and translate that into her studies. And I mean, she actually worked as a sports reporter, and then for a long time was the Mass Golf.
No, those were her dark days. She was a sports reporter, right?
Yeah. And then she has been for a long time the Mass Golf Association's. I guess you'd call her publicity director, and the other businesses. She's now the wife of the golfer Frank Vanna, and they have a family. I mean, it's just a great story. Then we have Shalane Flanagan. I mean, how can you not think about Shalane Flanagan, who has done so much in terms of running? And I remember specifically when she won the second time. She was the first person to win twice, first girl to win twice. And I said to her, the night that she won, I was talking to her and her mother, and I said, "What would you like to do next, Shalane?" And she said, "I'd like to be an Olympian, Mr. Moynihan." And it was such an amazing thing for her to say at that time. And look, she did it. She's done it, and she's been such an amazing runner. And wow, just a great, great kid and a great career. And God bless her, she's still running, which is wonderful. But there've been so many. I would certainly want to mention a couple of other people that, to me, were just the things that they did. Someone like Jim Eunice. Jim, as you remember, was just as good a high school football player as you'd ever want to see. I saw him as early as his freshman year at Gloucester. He was just terrific. And he got a full scholarship to Boston College. And then, if you remember, he had the concussion problem and he had to give up playing football. And he said, "Well, if I can't play football, I'm at a wonderful school. I'm going to make the most of Boston College." And he did. And he came back and at one of the luncheons and talked to us about how he had to change his idea from having that thought that I'm going to be a number one draft choice in the NFL to no NFL at all. But having that, again, we go back to that being a student. You always had that other thing that you can fall back on, and he did. And it's just another one of the wonderful stories. And just one that I was reading about a couple of weeks ago, Matt Antonelli. Matt from St. John's Prep was a three-sport kid. He was a terrific athlete. I saw him play often. I thought he was a marvelous kid. If you remember, Bill, he wanted to be a professional baseball player. That was his goal, and he went after it. Got all the way up, did get, I believe, with the San Diego team. I think he was up to the major leagues, but he was a Triple-A player for some time. Now he's back in the area. But there again, there's so much there that he can call on, and you know he's going to be a success no matter what he does now that he's back.
Yeah. You know, when I talk with the monthly winners, you know, I'm struck by how unique they are in all their different interests, aside from just athletics, classrooms, academics. You know, obviously there are some things that are the same, but their extracurriculars they all have them. They're very special people. They're very busy people. They're very I think you were disciplined people. For young people, so they break that mold of some of our sort of stereotypes that we think of with young people or are looking at our own lives when we're young, to be honest with you. But anyways, they are so well organized and they do have a lot together. They've got family support, which is so important, it seems, in so many of these cases, and good support with their athletic teams. And they really enjoy what they do athletically and also academically. So you got to do both to get to be at a point to win something like this, a monthly award such as this. And the other key here, Gerard, is they're nominated by their schools. I mean, it's not like there's a group of people that goes out scouring, because that would be very easy pickings to find great kids, you know. But these are kids that have been nominated by either their coach or athletic director or someone within the school generally.
Yeah, I think that was one of the things that we wanted to do at the very beginning of the program, was to make sure that the kids met the requirements of having done well in the sport in the particular month that they're nominated, but also that their grades would be or better in all subjects. And that was really important to us, so that each time a youngster is nominated, it goes through the school so that we know what that academic record is. The other part that I think is very important, two other parts that I think are essential to the program. One is that all sports are treated equally. You and I know that the major, the big sports get most of the play in the papers, be it the basketball or hockey and football and baseball. But we wanted to make sure right from the get-go that every youngster, no matter what team he played for, no matter what sport he was in, all treated the same. And that's the way it's been from day one. And the third thing was that these selections, as you know, are made by the sports writers who cover these kids all during the year. Nobody else votes, just the people who cover them. And I know you've been privy to the discussions, Bill. You know the sincerity that the guys bring to it when they make these selections. I have been amazed at the way they have, and I'm talking about the committee members now, and particularly Phil Stacey and Steve Krause and Nick Kukuru, the way that these guys sit down and talk about this. And this has been going on right since the very beginning. At that time when we started, it was Paul Halloran was the sports editor at the Item. I believe Paul Layton was involved in the early going. I know you were, Bill. But the idea was that every time that you discussed these youngsters, there was nothing political. It was just strictly who was the best athlete and who was the best student, and it was all based on what they actually had accomplished. And that's one thing that I'm really proud of, is the fact that any one of these kids that we name, they won this award. Nobody gave it to them in any way, shape, or form. They won it.
Yeah, I'll give one more shout-out name to Dan Harrison, who just left as sports editor at Newburyport.
Yes,
he
yes,
was very active
yes,
in this.
Yep.
And, I mean, he yep. was always at events, always at games, very, very active. And so he's been very instrumental in this, I know, in the last several years as well.
I think one of the other things that's been really good about the program is that the youngsters who have won have come from all the different high schools. It's not just the high schools that are in Division One or stuff like that. Every kid has been treated the same. And I think of, again, we were talking about double winners. How about Emily Lanois from Hamilton Wenham? Just terrific. And just recently for us, Katarina Rocha at Peabody, a terrific track star. If you recall, both she and Emily were terrific track stars.
Yeah.
But anytime I look at any of these youngsters, and normally you've heard me say this before, Bill, when we get to the luncheon, I normally tell everybody, if you want to know what this program is about, just look at the program. All you need to do is read those names, because this is nothing more than a history of North Shore sports. These kids have all contributed in a great way. And I would make this point to you. We've discussed this. You've heard us talk about this before. We're always amazed at the quality of youngsters we get. And once we get to know them a little bit in June, afterwards we say, gee, how can we top that? Will there be somebody out there who will be as good as, say, a Becky Blazer or any of the others that we've mentioned here today? Craig Milkars comes to mind. Youngster went to MIT, just terrific kid from Salem. We've had so many, but the thing is that the quality of the winner has stayed consistently strong, so that you can say, wow, these kids have maintained this high standard through all of the 25 years, that's terrific for me.
Well, what a great way to end. We'll stop there, Gerard. Congratulations, and we'll look forward to Tuesday for the 25th Student Athlete of the Year Awards and so on. Gerard, thanks for your time.
Thank you, Bill.
Yeah. Gerard Moynihan with us. I'm Bill Newell on MSO News Sports.
There you go. That's it. That's Connections for this week. Man, full show. Appreciate it. Thank you to everybody involved. Of course, to Bill Newell, the voice of the North Shore. I want to thank Salisbury Police Chief Tom Fowler, the Open Doors Executive Director Julie LaFontaine, Bobby Gibb, the famous Boston Marathoner and sculptor and activist, Heather Atwood of The Other Cape, and of course to Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber and the North Shore Student Athlete Program. We'll be back next Thursday. I'm Rick Moore for our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky, and for the voice of the North Shore, Bill Newell. Take care.